From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Traitor or patriot? The Edward Snowden story is complicated. Former Attorney General Eric Holder said Snowden shouldn't be pardoned, but conceded that Snowden performed a public service. There's a new movie out and a well-organized campaign to get President Obama to grant him a pardon. Not going to happen if this country's national security people have anything to say about it. This hour on Point, the push to pardon Edward Snowden. You can join us on air or online. What is your opinion of Edward Snowden? Patriot whistleblower? Traitor? He wants to come home. Should we let him? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Washington is Josh Meyer, senior investigative reporter for NBC News, focusing on national security. Josh, welcome back to On Point. Nice to have you.
Thanks very much.
So we'll get to the Snowden story in a moment. But first, I do want to get the latest from you on the bombs in New York and the pipe bombs found in New Jersey. This is a fluid situation. Lots changing. But investigators now have a suspect, Ahmad Khan Rahami. What do we know about him?
Very fluid indeed. He's 28 years old. He's being sought in connection with Saturday's bombing in Manhattan that hurt 29 people. This was one pressure cooker bombing that went off and another one also nearby that they found. And so they put out a wanted poster for him. Not much is known about him. They do believe that he is, his family is from Afghanistan. They ran a very unpopular, apparently, restaurant in the neighborhood that quote-unquote aggravated neighbors, according to the New York Times. He's the son of a man named Mohammed Rahami, who runs First American Fried Chicken on the ground floor of their home in Elmora Avenue. So they're scrambling to find out more about him as we speak.
I'm looking at an AP report that's just crossing the wires that says New York's governor now says it looks like the Manhattan bombing could be an act of terrorism with a foreign connection. Yesterday, Governor Andrew Cuomo effectively ruled out a link to international terrorism. Do we know why the change, Josh?
You know, we don't at this minute, but, you know, one of the hardest things about covering stories like this is that a lot of stuff is said and then walked back by various people, including the authorities. So I think we're trying to approach it with caution right now. A foreign connection can be almost anything. It could be a visit, you know, back to, you know, talk to relatives someplace in Afghanistan or Pakistan. It could be internet connections, or it could be a very substantial and real connection to some group, including Islamic State or Al-Qaeda. So we just don't know right now, and I think everybody's trying to figure that out.
The FBI has said Rahami should be considered to be armed and dangerous. They're searching his apartment, I'm reading here. Are these two incidents connected, Josh? The bombings in New York and those pipe bombs found in New Jersey, are the two connected?
They're working very hard to see if there are connections. They are different. The ones in New York were pressure cooker bombs, which is something that has been used by terrorists now for at least 10 years, where you basically take a common cooking device, you add a detonator and put a bunch of explosives in it. The ones in New Jersey were pipe bombs, which is a very different thing, but they could be related. Nobody's sure. There are, there's some evidence or information suggesting both options, that they are connected and that they're not. So I think that it's a very fluid situation, as you mentioned.
Any idea why the Chelsea neighborhood was targeted in New York?
We don't. At least I don't know. And I think they're looking very hard at that. It could be, again, it could be anything. It could be personal connections to Mr. Rahami or whoever else may or may not be involved. I think right now there's a lot that the authorities probably know that we don't know, but they're trying to figure this out. And I would suspect that within an hour or two, we'll know a lot more. I mean, don't forget the New York Police Department alone has 36,000 officers. They are all sort of, fanning out to figure out what's going on, to be vigilant, to be on alert for more attacks, and also to look for Mr. Rahami because he's still at large.
In a separate incident in Minnesota over the weekend, a man stabbed 9 people in a shopping mall. He reportedly asked one victim if he was Muslim during the attack. ISIS claims this attacker is a soldier of the Islamic State. Is there any information about the possibility of these two attacks, the one in Minnesota, the events in New Jersey and New York, were coordinated or connected in any way?
I have not heard of any. Sometimes things come out days or weeks or even months later that show that they are. At this minute, I don't think that anybody's seen any connections between these. And it's also hard to tell whether an ISIS connection can be made. When they say a soldier of the Islamic State, that can often be somebody who just reads their web postings and their calls for jihad and acts on the basis of them. So right now, I think that That too is a very fluid situation.
Thanks so much for your reporting on that, Josh. We've just learned that bombing suspect Ahmad Rahami is now in custody, so we'll have full coverage on this story tomorrow. Now I want to turn to the former NSA contractor Edward Snowden. Two completely contradictory narratives on him have emerged in the last week. I want to start with the first one, which is this House Intelligence Committee report. It comes after a 2-year investigation of Edward Snowden. Give us a summary of this very important report.
You know, I cover the committee, and I will try to stay objective to it. One thing that I will tell you that's worth noting is Bart Gellman, who has won 3 Pulitzers for The Washington Post, covered this story and, led their coverage that won the public service for the coverage of the Snowden documents. He read the report and he said that he wants to write something up because he said that it was aggressively dishonest and also trifling, and that they spent 2 years writing the report essentially to discourage people from going to see it. I thought it was an interesting report. I thought that it was notable some of the things that were not in there. I thought the timing of it was very interesting, that it literally was released on the eve of the Snowden movie, and as this campaign for a pardon heats up. One of the most interesting things you can do if you really want to follow this is to look at Snowden's Twitter feed. He's got 2.4 million followers. I'm looking now, I noticed that he only has 1 like. I don't know who that is or what, but he is really mounting an aggressive campaign, as are his supporters, for a pardon, because they believe that, I guess, once Obama leaves office, it'll be hard for either of the 2 presidential candidates to do the same.
I read on Twitter Mr. Snowden saying, "I used to work for the government, now I work for the public." Nonetheless, back to the House Intelligence Committee. This is some sound Democratic representative from California, Adam Schiff, ranking member of that House committee, saying that Edward Snowden is no whistleblower.
The vast majority of what he took has nothing to do with American privacy or the privacy rights of other people around the world. The majority of what he took, in fact, has to do with military secrets and defense secrets. And I think that is very much at odds with the narrative that he wants to tell, that he is a whistleblower.
So this report going to President Obama, as you mentioned, the Washington Post reporter calling it aggressively dishonest. Nonetheless, it's a scathing report, and the committee encouraging President Obama not to pardon Edward Snowden, Josh.
Right. And one thing I will add is, I mean, I've known Congressman Schiff for a long time, since he was a federal prosecutor in Los Angeles. And, he is, I think he's a lawmaker of deep integrity and so forth. And he does make some good points. I mean, I think that a lot of the stuff that Snowden released is not of the whistleblower category. He could have focused on the stuff about domestic surveillance that affects millions of people, as he said, and not released the other stuff. But some of the material that was contained in what he released is deeply, deeply hurtful to the United States and its interests overseas. I mean, it's really damaging stuff about how we conduct our espionage and cyber hacking against other countries, against foreign leaders, against foreign terrorist organizations. It does reveal sources and methods, which is sort of the crown jewels of the CIA and the NSA and so forth. So there's a lot of material in there that doesn't really point to him being a whistleblower. So I think a lot of the propaganda that's coming out in his side, the movie, et cetera, is also not the whole truth either.
So here's a bit from the movie Snowden, which is the second narrative out from Hollywood, director Oliver Stone's new biopic. Here is Snowden leaning over the shoulder of a coworker. He's shocked to learn that the NSA is sucking up information from essentially every cell phone in the world.
How is this all possible?
Think of it as a Google search, except instead of searching only what people make public, we're also looking at everything they don't. Emails, chats, SMS, whatever.
Yeah, but which people?
The whole kingdom, Snow White.
The NSA is really tracking every cell phone in the world.
Most Americans don't want freedom. They want security.
And here is Edward Snowden last week speaking to supporters via video conference from his exile in Russia, saying he did what he did out of patriotism.
The question of whether I, as a whistleblower, should be pardoned is not for me to answer. But I will say this. I love my country. I love my family. And I have dedicated my life to both of them.
So there's quite a vigorous campaign, Josh Meyer, to grant Edward Snowden a presidential pardon. Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, the ACLU all launched public campaigns urging the president to pardon him. Interesting that they're happening all at once. All of this is sort of happening all at once. Was the committee's report timed to come out at the same time as the movie, as the campaign and all the rest?
Well, you'd have to ask them, but I think people have noticed the timing of it and found that it is, like Bart Gellman, I think, said, and Snowden himself have said that that it appears to be timed specifically to knock down any effort for the pardon campaign to get a boost from the movie. I have read a lot of things pros and cons about the movie. I've not seen the movie yet, but saying that Oliver Stone is back into true to form. Whatever that is, there's people that feel very strongly one way or the other about this, and I think the movie probably will not change their minds. I think the supporters in this camp, the movie, and that the people that don't agree won't see it. So I'm not sure what'll happen. I would find it very, very surprising the Obama administration does some kind of pardon, but you never know. I don't know what they're considering at this point.
And if there are...
Maybe a plea agreement would be more likely.
All right.
Some kind of negotiated settlement to this.
And if there is no pardon, what are Snowden's options? Does he stay in Russia the rest of his life?
Well, that's a very good question. I mean, and so, you know, I've been reporting on the Russian hacks and so forth, and there's a lot of layers to this. I mean, you know, whether the Russians are involved in the hacking of the Democratic Party and other institutions in the United States, whether they have co-opted Snowden after he got there, whether there's any indication that they had some kind of collaborative efforts beforehand, which I haven't seen. So this is sort of like a movie coming to life in its own right, I think. So stay tuned.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, we're talking about the new push to get NSA contractor Edward Snowden pardoned and back to the U.S. from Russia. You can join the conversation. Do you think he should come home, stand trial, make his case in court? Did going to Russia change the calculus? You can follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Here's a moment from the new Oliver Stone movie Snowden that came out last Friday. A colleague is showing Snowden just what the NSA is capable of when it comes to peering into the lives of private citizens.
What is that? Is that some video that she sent somebody?
No, this is live. Out of Paris.
What do you mean live?
Optic nerve? It's camera and mic activation.
I wish we could take credit, but the Brits wrote it.
Activation? Yeah, her laptop's off.
And here is President Obama in 2013. He says his administration had already begun to rein in the NSA and other agencies before Snowden leaked his information.
I don't think Mr. Snowden was a patriot. As I said in my opening remarks, I called for a thorough review of our surveillance operations before Mr. Snowden made these leaks. My preference, and I think the American people's preference, would have been for a lawful, orderly examination of these laws.
Joining me now from New York City is Jane Harman, president and CEO of the Wilson Center and former Democratic congresswoman from California. She served 8 years on the House Intelligence Committee, 6 on the House Armed Services Committee, and 8 on the Homeland Security Committee. Thanks so much for being here, Ms. Harman. Nice to have you.
Thank you, Jane.
So the House Intelligence Report on Edward Snowden says it is convinced that the NSA and the intelligence community in general haven't done enough to prevent another massive unauthorized disclosure of documents. You know the security apparatus of this country very well. Do you agree? How do you see it?
Well, I think there's a lot more to do. What Snowden did was extremely calculating, and if you read the declassified summary of the House report, which, by the way, was unanimously released, that's highly unusual in this toxic partisanship of Washington, you will, at least I found the conclusions devastating. But Snowden went to Hawaii. That was his last stop as a NSA contractor. He used a thumb drive to extract 1.5 million documents, and then, according to this declassified summary, He told his supervisor that he'd be out of the office to receive treatment for worsening epilepsy, and instead he was on his way to Hong Kong with the stolen secrets. What happened since then is that there is now what's called the two-man rule. You can't act alone in the kind of position that he had. Someone else is with you so that presumably, unless they're in collusion, one would prevent the other from doing mm-hmm. these kinds of things. Plus, there is much more heightened security around the role that he had, which was broad access to material as a fairly young guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was clever. There's no question. But let's understand, as you were discussing with Josh Meyer, that most of what he took, and that's what the House report says, was not related to this metadata program, but was related to our intelligence toolkit and seriously compromised our ability to act against bad targets around the world.
In the post-Snowden era, as it's now called, you told NPR recently that we haven't had an adequate debate in this country about the trade-offs of security and liberty. What's missing in that conversation to your mind?
Thank you for asking that. My view is that security and liberty are not a zero-sum game. It's not that you get more of one and less of the other. The goal is to get more of both. And that certainly was on my mind as I worked on this stuff in Congress. If you want to give Snowden some credit, and I do, I would say that he has prompted a national debate about these programs that we should have had at when they were invented right after 9/11. What went wrong then was that the Bush administration, primarily Vice President Cheney, decided that rather than go through Congress and amend the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which was the law in place, it still is the law in place, the president would use his commander-in-chief authorities and justify a new program by virtue of some new Justice Department memos written in the Office of Legal Counsel. And a few of us were briefed on this program. I was one because I was the senior Democrat on intelligence, but I was told it strictly complied with law, and I assumed that was the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, when instead it was, looking back on it, rogue authorities. And that prevented the public debate we should have had. We began to have it in 2008, before Snowden did this, when we amended FISA, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, to cover the program. And by the way, although Snowden says he'd never, you know, he was shocked and horrified, there was a number of people who did know about this program and who were fighting, as I was, to protect both privacy and security at the same time.
In an op-ed in the Washington Post a couple of years ago, actually, you wrote that in the post-Snowden age, fashioning smart policies that protect security and liberty is the way forward. You also wrote that although Snowden's deeds were despicable, this public debate could yield real dividends.
Right.
You just said that you give Snowden some credit. Should he be pardoned, Jane Harmon?
Well, I mean, I find this kind of bizarre because he hasn't been convicted of anything. The only person I know of who was pardoned before he was convicted was Richard Nixon. I think if Snowden wants to come back to the United States, and I think we should encourage it if he chooses to do this, he should face trial. He's been charged under the Espionage Act, a 100-year-old statute. It's very hard to get convictions under the Espionage Act. He would be tried by his peers. There is a lot of sympathy for him in the United States. Let's see what happens. He could, do plea bargaining. That was mentioned in your segment prior to this with Josh Meyer. And, I would certainly hope that if that happened, he would have to face up to the fact that, as he has admitted, that he stole unlawfully major secrets of the United States. Mm.
A lot of listeners want to get in here. Let's get Janet first from Newton, Massachusetts. Hi, Jana. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jay.
Hi. Go ahead.
The subject was very appealing. I just had to call. I think Edward Snowden is a traitor to his country, and he could have done this in another way. So, and he did take an oath in that job that he had, that he would not divulge secrets, and he broke that pretty badly. And the interview he had with that woman, was it Congresswoman?
Jane Harmon,
That made it even worse. So I guess I'm very old-fashioned, and I think that he should be hung.
All right, Janet, thank you. Jane Harmon, I mean, there are real emotional arguments on both sides, right? I mean, some call him a traitor, some call him a patriot.
Well, I call him neither. All I'm sure of is he's not a whistleblower. He has not yet been convicted. So I think we should slow down a little bit here. But let me just read from this, again, this declassified summary from the House Intelligence Committee that was unanimously released the other day. It said, in June 2016, the deputy chairman of the Russian Parliament's Defense and Security Committee publicly conceded that Snowden did share intelligence with his government. We've never been able to prove that he didn't do this. He also went to Hong Kong first, and in order to get into Hong Kong, he had to have permission of the Chinese. So in addition to taking material, I would at least think there's credible evidence, or the lack of that we can't prove the negative, that this material was shared with two governments, Russia's and China's.
Let me get a couple more voices into this discussion. Joining me now from New York, Dinah Pokempner. She's general counsel of Human Rights Watch. Her organization, along with the ACLU and Amnesty, is leading the Pardon Snowden campaign. Dinah, thanks for being here. Nice to have you.
Hi, Jane.
Also joining us, thank you. Also joining us from Washington is Melissa Maley. She's a former operations officer at the CIA who served in the Middle East. She now does strategic consulting for the international firm Dentons and serves on the advisory board of the International Spy Museum in Washington. Melissa, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Jane.
So, Melissa, we'll start with you. Where do you stand on this? Should Edward Snowden be pardoned or not? Is he a whistleblower, a traitor, or both?
Like Jane Harmon, I don't see him as a whistleblower. I do. I'm not going to give labels as traitor or not, because I think really he does need to come back to the United States and face court of law, stand before a jury and a judge. But what I will say is that the idea that you can claim to be a whistleblower and that you can by unilaterally decide that you know what's best for the nation, and to expose, to compromise such a breadth of intelligence information, I find it very difficult to square that with as a public service. Because how can a public service be endangering that same public? Mm.
Dinah Pokempner, what do you say?
I don't think there's any doubt that Ed Snowden is a whistleblower. It's hard to think of any American in the last 5 years whose information has had such a profound effect on public policy, public debate, not only in this country and abroad. I do think that there's a lot of misinformation that has been recirculated in the last few minutes. When we say he ought to come back and stand trial, people have to understand that Ed Snowden wouldn't have anything to say at this trial. The Espionage Act is like a strict liability law. You disclose information to somebody who's not supposed to have it, boom, you go to jail. You don't even get to explain why. The government doesn't even have to show it's terribly damaging. That's the essence of the law. So to say he should come back and tell it to the court is a bit disingenuous. We already know what he did. And the point is, people who try to expose wrongdoing never get a chance in court or otherwise to explain to the public why they did it and let a court or the public judge was it actually to the national benefit.
Let me get James in here from Charlotte, North Carolina. James, welcome to On Point. You're on the air.
Oh, hi, Jane. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm a military member myself. I actually work around classified material every now and then. I'm actually a Black Hawk mechanic for the Army. And the thing is, I think Edward Snowden is no more than just a disgruntled government employee who just tried to go ahead and hold a grudge, because he was discharged from the Army for having an injury. And I think really just has a grudge back and forth. But I think the main issue here is really the mistrust between government and civilians that it's supposed to protect. Like if you look back in history, such as, especially Martin Luther King, there are surveillance programs done to monitor him. I think pretty much how is this justified, the surveillance back and forth? But still you have to take into consideration the element of terrorism that we live in today.
Mm-hmm.
Like we always there's always a standard of surveillance. You're always going to be on camera somewhere, especially if you live in the city.
Jane Harmon, I mean, you know, the House Intelligence Committee report agreed with James Collar here that Edward Snowden was not a whistleblower, but a disgruntled employee, that a real whistleblower would have remained in the United States, not fled to Russia, not fled to China. You know, what do you say?
Well, let me say that I have great respect for the organizations that are disagreeing with my view of this, Human Rights Watch and the ACLU. I think they're very important to our public dialogue. But I think the Human Rights Watch is wrong on this. There are opportunities for people to be genuine whistleblowers. One of the issues that has been raised is that because he worked for a defense, Snowden worked for a defense contractor, not a defense agency, he might not have been covered under the whistleblower statute. Well, there was a presidential policy directive issued after that, which makes pretty clear, according to the drafters, that he would have been covered. So he had avenues to complain, among other places, to Capitol Hill, to the House and Senate Intelligence Committees. He didn't take advantage of those opportunities. He never really even complained, according to the House Intelligence Committee unanimous report the other day, to his supervisors.
Yeah, and so let me ask Dinah Pulkempner then. Dinah, what do you say? Did going to China, going to Russia show Snowden's real intent?
All right, I want to just correct certain things. First of all, going to Hong Kong is not exactly going to China. Anyone can jump on a plane in the United States, go to Hong Kong, and have a nice time. As a tourist, it doesn't mean you're going to share governments with, share secrets with the Chinese government. Similarly, Mr. Snowden's in Russia because the State Department canceled his passport in the middle of his attempt to reach Latin America. So we can thank our State Department for his present location. However, those two issues aside, the question of whether, you know, we can say that he had an opportunity to complain, I think, is also a red herring. First of all, Mr. Snowden wouldn't have been covered by any of the laws or directives that cover intelligence sector whistleblowers because he was a contractor. Secondly, the NSA has this sad, horrible history of persecuting and retaliating against NSA employees who use the internal channels. There's a whole gang of them, starting with Thomas Drake, going to Bill Binney and others, who had their careers and lives destroyed when they tried to use these internal channels. The reason that it's so easy for the NSA to get away with that is because there's no legal right on behalf of these people to actually enforce the promise of non-retaliation in court. So, yes, they're channels, but boy, are you in danger if you use them.
Melissa Maley, jump in here. What about this argument that Snowden, Edward Snowden, not your average spy, not your average mole, that he released more than just surveillance information? He released highly sensitive information about U.S. defense programs that was damaging to this country.
I think it's highly, I think we should reflect on just the extent of the compromise. You know, he's trying to justify his actions by saying, oh, I did this for the public good. And yet, at the same time, when you take a look at the breadth of this, to have the Defense Intelligence Agency say that Snowden had done grave damage to intelligence operations and to force protection issues, I think that should give us pause. In the intelligence world, we are expected to get it right every single time. We're expected to stop those terrorist attacks. And not just some of the time, all the time. And yet, when it comes to be given the tools, and this is, I do believe, is a very important debate, national debate, but we need to be more thoughtful in that process of what is the outcome that we seek. We seek an intelligence community that can do its job, keep Americans safe, but also work under robust oversight so that, you know, Americans have confidence in the legality and the privacy issues, you know, that all that's being taken into consideration. But what I think what Snowden did is he took it upon himself to decide that he was the decider and he had channels and he chose not to do that. And I think that alone is very telling.
This On Point podcast and following message are brought to you by Goldman Sachs. For answers to the world's most pressing economic questions, from the evolution of consumer preferences to the reasons for price swings in the oil market, Tune in to Exchanges at Goldman Sachs, the firm's podcast. Each episode features in-depth discussions with some of the firm's leading experts on the markets, evolving industries, and the global economy. Subscribe to Exchanges at Goldman Sachs on iTunes, Stitcher, or SoundCloud, or listen at gs.com/podcast.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, we're hearing the debate this hour around the push to have Edward Snowden pardoned, forgiven for revealing sensitive state secrets because of what he was told about government spying on everyone. You can join this conversation. What would you do? Pardon Snowden, not pardon Snowden, or a combination of the two? You can follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Here is Edward Snowden speaking at a live event for the new movie Snowden by video conference last week, talking about the importance of privacy.
Privacy isn't about something to hide. Privacy is about something to protect. Privacy is the right to the self. Privacy is what gives you the ability to share with the world who you are on your own terms, for them to understand what you're trying to be, and to protect for yourself the parts of you that you're not sure about, that you're still experimenting with. If we don't have privacy, what we're losing is the ability to make mistakes. We're losing the ability to be ourselves.
In 2013, the White House criticized Russia's decision to offer Snowden asylum and called for Snowden to return to the United States to face trial. Here was White House spokesman Jay Carney at that time.
Mr. Snowden is not a whistleblower. He is accused of leaking classified information and has been charged with three felony counts, and he should be returned to the United States as soon as possible, where he will be accorded full due process and protections.
And here was former Speaker of the House John Boehner in 2014 on Edward Snowden.
Edward Snowden is a traitor to our country. He's damaged our ability to keep Americans safe here and abroad. And there's no other word that should describe him other than a traitor.
My guests this hour, Jane Harman, former Democratic Congresswoman, Dinah Pokempner, General Counsel for Human Rights Watch, and Melissa Maley. She's former Operations Officer at the CIA. She served in the Middle East. So many calls here. I want to get some in. Dave in Bedford, Massachusetts. Hi, Dave. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
Yeah, I guess there are a couple of points I'll try to make real quick. One is I'm kind of disgusted by the degree to which a narrative has been hijacked. This is really about our ability to have privacy. It's not about Edward Snowden, the character of the person. It's about what our intelligence agencies are doing with the power that they have that really doesn't have a whole lot of transparency. And I would ask any guest, at what point in our history as a society, a democratic society, has an absence of transparency and the accumulation of power been a good thing or led to a good thing?
Dave, thank you. Melissa Maley, would you respond to that?
I think this is a very important question because there's, I think also when it depends where you start off on the discussion. Should there be secrets? Should the United States keep certain information not available to the public? And if you start off with the say, no, there should be no secrets, then there's not really much of a conversation. But if you do believe that there are some things that need to be protected, then you become, the next question is, okay, where do you draw that line? And I think it's, this has come up before, but there is a lack of American confidence in the type of secrets that the intelligence community is keeping and how they are guarded or protected and then how they are used. Ultimately, I believe the only way to address this is, one, to have a clear policy and have that policy be driven by a robust debate, and two, there needs to be a system of checks and balances. And every time the intelligence community has really gotten into a deep controversy, a deep scandal, it's because there's been a failure on one of those two fronts. So I do believe a policy debate is warranted and useful, but I also believe that we need to create a very robust oversight structure so that Americans know that the American Congress is watching their back.
Adam in Nashville, Tennessee, you're on the air. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
My question is, my understanding was that Edward Snowden never actually released the documents to the public. And I keep hearing your guest and even yourself say that he's releasing it. It's my understanding that he gave it to newspapers like Der Spiegel, and they combed the information and released it to the public. So I was wanting to get some clarity on that. And then if he if he didn't actually release the document, do your guests see any distinction between like what he did and Chelsea Manning did, where Chelsea Manning just took all this information and dumped it on WikiLeaks? Thank you for taking my call.
Adam, thank you. Thank you very much. Jane Harmon, I'll give you the time here to respond. How exactly was the information released?
Well, it was released through the press, but he worked with someone to go to Hong Kong, and as I understand it, the sort of deal was cooked, that this is where he would go and this is how it would be released. And the press is protected under a shield in a way that an individual is not. And you can argue whether that's good or bad. I do think we need a robust press. So I would come out that way. I just want to say something about the prior question, and I thought the answer by Melissa Maley was excellent. We do need a robust public debate. We do need public buy-in. We do need strict laws around what our intelligence community can do and can't do, but we also do need to let it keep secrets where they are necessary. Sources and methods, how we are finding things out, are important to protect. Otherwise, real people die. And Edward Snowden, through these press outlets, released some of our sources and methods and put people in danger. And it's not acceptable. I just would make a final comment on this stuff. I'm in New York City. Over this weekend, there were several bombs found, and there was another pipe bomb in New Jersey. The hunt is on, and I want our intelligence communities, if they have information on these people, to be able to track them. I appreciate the need for individual privacy. Sure, people want to know who they are, but do we want to protect the privacy of some person who was radicalized possibly on the internet, who wants to kill the rest of us? I don't think so.
Adam, thanks so much for the call. Dinah Pokempner, I want to bring you back in here. We talk about Edward Snowden going to Russia. Must we assume that the Chinese, the Russians, have picked Snowden's brain, possibly picked through his documents now that he's over there? Wouldn't it be naive to think that Chinese intelligence would be extremely interested, Russian intelligence would be extremely interested to find out what else he knows?
I'm sure they're interested, just as we're interested in knowing everything about people who seek asylum here who might have worked for intelligence agencies. That doesn't mean that they necessarily found that much. All accounts and all evidence that's come forward to the public so far is that Ed Snowden destroyed his own access to the documents in Hong Kong when he handed them to the journalists. Moreover, he told the journalists that before they published any story, they had to call the U.S. government first and hear it out on whether it would harm national security, and that instruction has been followed. So to just say that, oh, he just, you know, put it all out there and, of course, the Russians have it, I think is disingenuous. One of the things that's so disappointing about the Intelligence Committee report is that it hardly gives any information at all. It does have a whole litany of accusations, but it doesn't really support them. For example, the Russian legislator that apparently said that he was interviewed, as far as we can tell, it's a comment of a Russian parliamentarian recorded on NPR where the guy's saying, well, yes, I think that our intelligence services are really thorough and they probably would have gotten the information. As far as I can tell, that's speculation. That's not evidence. So we don't really have a lot. I'm not saying, by the way, that it's impossible that national security was harmed or that some of these disclosures may have caused damage. But we don't have any evidence. The public has not been informed in a way that is specific, clear, concrete. As to sources and methods, that seems to refer to the fact that these programs exist, because there also haven't been any reports of anyone being harmed by them. I have no doubt it inconvenienced and in some way was detrimental to U.S. surveillance, but there's also no evidence that U.S. surveillance, that any of these programs have stopped except the ones that have been explicitly changed by Congress.
Jane Harmon, is that true? No one harmed because of what Edward Snowden did?
I would say it's exactly opposite that. Edward Snowden had no proof that anyone was harmed by the programs. The agencies, the intelligence agencies, and I can't go into what they say in classified settings, are convinced that people were harmed, and certainly our playbook of how we do certain things abroad was fully disclosed. And that's by my lights, not the act of, not a responsible act by somebody who just wanted to, as he says, tell us about this metadata program, which actually Congress had debated in 2008, as I said, and put fully under law.
Clay on Twitter says only President Obama knows how many deep cover agents and foreign assets have been killed because of Snowden. JP says Snowden needs to come home, be given a fair trial, and when and if convicted by a jury of his peers, then a pardon can be considered. Here's from our website. Failure to pardon Snowden is akin to shooting the messenger and protecting a security state operating in the dark with scant oversight. This vast network is probably now well beyond the power of any elected institution or person to counteract. Let's go to Vance now in Framingham, Massachusetts. Hi, Vance. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hello, Jane.
Hi.
I started off in the early days back in the 80s with the text retrieval tools that went into the program and the operating system that went into the program. And this was only supposed to be done on the international borders. When I did a project at One Bell Center in St. Louis, there's the equipment spying on everybody in the mid-80s. Okay, so when Diane sits here and says that the government's all aware of all this stuff, they're only aware at a certain level, and they don't want to know the details the way that they should. If the lawmakers were more intent on, you know, limiting things out there, then the problem that happened with Elliot Spitzer never would have come to light. But you're going to start seeing people using this system to do anything that they want, whenever they want, and hide how the details came to them. And that's what's really going on in this system right now.
Vance, thank you so much for the call. Let's get another voice in here. Ellen in Melrose, Massachusetts. Hi, Ellen. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Jane. I don't really care how we characterize Snowden at this point, but I'm just really glad that we have the information in the sense of what he told us about the system. And my question to the people who are all up in arms and like, oh, he's a traitor and this is so horrible is, you know, how else were we supposed to find this information out? Because nobody else was telling us that this was happening. And I'm really glad we know this. And we should have known that they were doing this.
Ellen, got it. Excellent question. Glad you called. Melissa Maley, what do you say?
Well, on the question of what we know and what we don't know, in that category of what we don't know is the extent of the compromise that Snowden has done. We don't know how broad and how deep. And so, and I think that if he came back to the United States, those are the sets of questions that the U.S. government would like to ask him about. Because in order to protect ourselves, to protect national security, protect citizens, the extent of this compromise really needs to be fleshed out. So that's a very strong reason for it to come back. Now, whether they cut a deal with him or not, that's up for the courts to decide. But the other thing about just on monitoring Americans' communications and stuff, I think there's just a real misperception. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of communications every day. What an intelligence professional wants to do is to focus on the threats. They want to focus on who can harm America. They're not interested in knowing what your shopping list is today. And I think we lose perspective in these conversations about privacy. There is privacy, but there also is those groups that exploit our values, exploit our systems in order to do us harm. And we need to be able to let the intelligence community, law enforcement community, do their jobs.
Jane Harmon, I'm curious what has changed to your mind in terms of national security since Edward Snowden. Seems like we're getting hacked left and right in this country.
Yeah, that's unfortunately true, and certainly many of us believe that a lot of those hacks are coming from individuals, non-state actors, and maybe even some blessed by the government of Russia. Think about where Edward Snowden now resides. Just a couple of corrections, and I will answer your point. In 2005, President Bush partially or mostly declassified the metadata program that we're talking about, which is a collection basically of telephone records. It's not listening to people's conversations. That led to Congress figuring out that the program did not comply with the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. And then there was a debate in Congress in 2008. Members of Congress voted to bring the program under the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. So it's not that nobody knew about it. Snowden's leaks focused a bigger attention on it, but it was not a secret in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
And you've asked what's changed in terms of hacks. Well, it's a different set of threats. These are people invading our privacy. It's not the NSA. It's not the United States government. It's rogue groups or even countries deciding that they're invading our privacy. So those are threats we have to defend against, too. I mean, let me just say this.
Yep.
Privacy is a value. It's important. So is security. We need both.
Don Appel-Kempner, I'm going to give you the last word here. You believe that Edward Snowden should be pardoned. You believe he's a whistleblower. I'm just curious, can you be a hero and still pay a price?
He should be pardoned because our laws are not fair. They don't allow anyone to argue that what you did is in the public interest. I'd like to also mention that while everyone's focused on the metadata program, there are other programs, and many of the international revelations were important and significant in human rights terms as well. How would you feel as an American if your government said, well, yeah, we respect your privacy, but every other country in the world can scoop up everything. And I don't think that people are really worried about their shopping lists. I think they're worried about, am I a Muslim? Can I talk about my government? Do I have freedom of expression? That's what we're saying. We're saying only the rights of Americans count. Everybody else's privacy is irrelevant. Just trust us. We'll protect you.
Well, stay tuned.
That's how a democracy works.
Stay tuned. Don Appel-Kempner, thank you so much for your insights, for coming in today. General Counsel of Human Rights Watch. Great to have you, Dinah. Melissa Maley, former operations officer at the CIA. Also great to have you, Melissa. Thanks for your perspective.
Thank you.
And Jane Harmon, President and CEO of the Wilson Center. Great to have you as always, Jane. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane.
Continue the conversation. Listeners, get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point.